into the theater and the usher nods me in. They know me here. I descend down the staircase behind the movie screen that only select people know about. The door at the bottom opens and I walk in. The sound of movie spoilers fill the air. The barkeep has my drink ready and motions me to the back. The rest of the crew are here already. This is my type of place and these are my type of people. Join me as we discuss the inner secrets of cinema. Have a seat in the spoiler room.
And here we are, guys and gals, to another episode of the spoiler room. We did an episode on part one, so I figured why not do an episode on its sequel. Yes, we're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, where James Gunn once again brings us our favorite Guardians. And tonight, to talk about this film, we have a great crew with us. First of all, the diva of the spoiler room is back. It is the one, the only, it is Dawn. Hello, Dawn. How are you?
Hello, Mark. I am fantastic. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
Glad to hear. Hope you can get spaced out with us tonight. Oh, there's one of many puns that'll probably be coming. And next to her is the BFD himself. He is in the spoiler room once again. It is our own Glenn Bittner. Hello, Glenn.
Hi.
How you doing tonight?
I'm doing good.
Good to hear. Good to hear. Ready to get your galaxy on? And next to Glenn, wearing the bow tie ferret, the man, it is Mr. Paul Salzer. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
And how are you doing this evening?
Except for the fact that I blew out my knee, I'm doing really well.
You blew out your knee?
Yeah. Wow. Have you ever had one of those intense dreams and you woke up and then whatever happened in the dream affected you in reality? That's what happened to me.
Oh. Yeah, it's called life, my whole life.
Oh, I'm sorry, Glenn.
Glenn's whole life is nothing but one bad.
It's not like I have only bad dreams. What the hell do you think? My God, I have good dreams too.
No, I'm thinking about the beer again. That apple.
You're thinking beer. About the beer. We're talking about dreams, and suddenly Paul starts thinking about not your mom's apple pie. I think there's some issues going on. Just like there's issues with our characters here, our favorite Guardians who are back in Volume 2. And, well, we basically have our crew who have gathered, and we see that there's still a fighting across the galaxy to protect it, all the while also trying to find out the true nature of Peter Quill's parentage. And they end up coming across old foes. They make new foes. And they take you on another wild ride through the galaxy. You know what? I'm going to start off here by just saying, yeah, I wasn't quite sure what to expect with this film, especially when they open up again with a flashback. Yes, there's spoilers because this is a spoiler rooms, folks. And we get a young Kurt Russell. And I'm like, okay, all right, so here we go. Dawn, how this film opens, how'd you feel about seeing young Kurt Russell? Do you think they did a good job making him young? Or did it look a little plasticky to you?
You know, not that I'm showing my age. They did not do as good of a job with Kurt Russell as they had previously on, say, Ant-Man with Michael Douglas. He looked a little bit cartoonish, yeah. I mean, especially for those of us who know what Kurt Russell looked like when he was even 20 years younger, my God.
Well, I mean, that part of that might be because it was mostly makeup and not CG.
Yes.
That could very well be, yes.
Yeah, I've read two reports. I read one where they used a lot of makeup with him, and then they also used a stand-in for him, and they kind of did a melding of the two. And then I heard others that just said it was Kurt Russell, but just a lot of makeup. So not quite sure which one it is, but I still thought they did all right.
The face movement didn't quite match completely, and that's what threw me off.
Oh, okay. Well, I think you know why it worked better with Douglas was because he didn't do a whole lot of movement. And in here, we've got Kurt Russell doing a heck of a lot more of movement, especially the moves on Peter Quill's future mom, if you will. But Glenn, how about you? How'd you feel about it? Especially considering we all know what Kurt Russell looked like when we were growing up. Did that throw you off at all of how they made him look really young?
No, I thought they did a pretty good job of it.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Paul? Did that throw you off at all?
It did not, because I was still more into the music and just about the characters interacting. I really didn't notice it that much. So,
and for me, I was surprised. You know, I did not expect them to open it in the 80s and then, you know, jump ahead to our guardians fighting an interdimensional monster who's looking to suck batteries. So compared to the opening of the first one, because we're going to do a number of comparisons, Glenn, how'd you feel about the opening to this Guardians of the Galaxy versus, say, the first one?
I love the opening of this one. Mm-hmm. I like how they just kind of got right into it right away.
They didn't really waste time with setting up here's what you missed from last time.
No, they didn't do a, you know, episode of Supernatural where they have to tell you what happened in season one. I'm like, it's season 10. I know what happened in season one.
Because sequels, especially some like this, you kind of feel like you get that every so you'll get a montage during the credit sequence.
Yeah.
But instead of that, we get to, well, we kind of see our guardians in action. Paul, what'd you think about the fact that we're following Dancing Groot and you're actually getting majority of this fight in the background?
I thought it was an interesting way to do it. And I'm going to say right away that Groot was my favorite character from the first film. Mm-hmm. But in the second film, he was my least favorite character. I did not like Baby Groot. I thought he was more of a distraction. And this was a prime example of it where, that's cute. That's funny. But I kind of wanted a little bit more of the action. And it was all happening in the background. So it was, again, every time he popped up, it was kind of a distraction to me. It was like my eyes were fixated on what was happening in the background. And I think maybe that was probably part of the point, was to try to make you like really see the film differently. So they accomplished that for sure.
And Don, how about you? The way they opened that, where you don't get to see the majority of the battle, we get to see dancing Baby Groot.
Oh, I got a kick out of that. I thought it was adorable. I didn't mind it. I can absolutely see Paul's point, but it didn't bother me so much because, I don't know. It didn't bother me, but I do see Paul's point. I was trying to look at the background stuff, but I felt it was, you know, an appropriate light
mm-hmm.
beginning for it.
Sure.
I think it also, I mean, part of why it worked for me is because that fight isn't important at all.
No, not at all.
It's background noise is what it is. And I think that's how they played it off.
Right.
To kind of set up the current dynamic with the team.
Yeah.
Yeah. It lets you know that they're actually still not exactly working as cohesive as you might expect.
Yeah. Especially that scene where Drax like lands by him and he does that freeze he did in the cut scene from the end of the first one, where he just stands there and doesn't move.
Yeah, or there's the, you know, you still got the debate going on with Rocket setting up the music for them to fight, kind of poking fun at the first one where he had music playing when he was doing his heist.
Yeah.
And they actually kind of make fun of it and they're arguing. Yeah, we actually have our guardians are still not really playing that well with each other. Which I liked. I like, because usually you get that at, you know, dun, 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 the team comes together and then you get to the sequel and everybody's like kumbaya and holding hands and just awesome. And in this one, not so much. They're still kind of their own beings in this one, their own individuality. You know, like Peter and Gamora, where he asks, why does Gamora have a gun?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you're doing guns now? It's just that swords are normally your thing. I just love that little bit because it's like, okay.
Go ahead. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm kind of looking at the timeline here.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like this film takes place like only like 3 months after the first Guardians of the Galaxy is supposed to have taken place. And that's why everything is still so new with the team.
Yeah. They haven't been together that long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cause Baby Groot really hasn't grown that much. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, they really haven't been together that long. I mean, cause he's still got, you know, you got the Ravagers are still licking their wounds from the battle. And a lot of people are still referencing it. So it's, mm-hmm. it's something that is still, you know, recent, I think. And that's what sparked, you know, later on the appearance of Ego is the fact that, you know, that news just traveled quick. And since he is who he is, it makes sense. He found Peter rather quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, I like, I like the fact that we don't have everybody working quite so well together. But I know that might not sit quite so well with others. Paul, how about you with the way our group dynamic was in this first one? Did you like the fact that they weren't quite a cohesive unit yet?
I preferred it because it would have been a distraction for me when they decided in this film to kind of pair off the group with different people. And mm-hmm. I think it was necessary to not focus too much on the team again, because the first movie they got together, that team dynamic was there. And I love that. And I was much more interested in the new pairings. You know, you had Ego and Peter, you had the two sisters, you had Drax and Mantis. You know, I had all those different pairings. Even Rocket had Yondu with different pairings. And I just loved the fact that we got to see the story go off in the directions. And if the group was together, like it was in the end of the Guardians mm-hmm. one. I just think it wouldn't have played out as well. So right. I enjoyed what they did here. I enjoyed that they kind of separated out to allow us to get all these new characters and still have that team still. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought they did a good job with that.
Yeah, they're still a team, and yet they're still individuals, which can sometimes get lost in later films when you get group films like this. I mean, mm-hmm. down to the point of one of the members is the whole reason why they're being pursued by these help me out.
Sovereign?
The Sovereign. Thank you. The assholes.
Yes.
I'm winking with my wrong eye again. Now, I'm not too familiar with the comics, but Glenn, the portrayal of the Sovereigns, did they get that fairly accurate, or are these new guys?
All right with it. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I've never been a huge follower of Guardians of the Galaxy in the comics, so I mean, I only know marginally how some of this stuff is. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I liked them though, because, and I like the fact too, because you couldn't quite tell from the trailers what the actual catalyst was for these people going after them. And then you find out, oh yeah, it's because of our Guardians that that we basically have them going after the Guardians. And I thought that was a nice little twist with it, you know, in their motivation. Don, how'd you feel about the Sovereign and kind of how they set it up of why the Sovereign were going after the Guardians?
It worked. It was, yeah, the each member of the Guardians still had their little issues that they needed to get over. They weren't all working cohesively. And, you know, it made absolute sense.
that Rocket steals the batteries.
That Rocket would steal the batteries, and then Drax would know about it and think it was a great joke. You know, the person who doesn't get jokes.
Yeah.
And then, Yeah, that just, it made perfect sense. I thought that the Sovereign were kind of left pretty mysterious as to what they actually were.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mind that because the story wasn't so much about that. The story was about the further development of the characters, which I always like.
Which, yeah, I mean, this again is another, it's a Marvel film where we get a villain, though we do get another villain, which we'll talk about a little later, who is on a bigger epic scale. But Marvel tends to focus a little bit more, it seems, more on developing more of the superhero characters and getting more in depth with them than the villain. Paul, how'd you feel about those villains? And would you say Marvel kind of has this trend of the villains just kind of being the motivation, but it's really always about, it seems, the development or the depth of the superheroes?
Yes, I agree with you there. And I don't mind, because to me, I love the hero's journey. I prefer superheroes. I want to be a superhero. I don't want to be a supervillain. So, I enjoy watching films that cover the heroes more than the villains. Yes, that you have to have a strong villain, though, to have a good, you know, to make the hero seem that much better.
Right.
But I think sometimes if you have, like, the teams that Marvel puts together, I think you can kind of dismiss some of the villainy, because they can focus on building up the heroes through the team dynamic rather than having that one-on-one-ness.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't mind what Marvel's doing there. I think that they do eventually need to get a strong villain, especially for the Infinity Wars. If they don't get Thanos right, I think that's going to disappoint a lot of people.
Considering they've been building it up for, what, 11 movies or something?
I know.
you're right there. Hopefully they do nail that right. But here we get our Guardians escaping the Sovereign, and we get to see everybody with their strengths. And I've seen some criticism about how Drax was in this, and I will say that I was disappointed that the trailer showed a good chunk of his jokes. But Glenn, did you feel Drax was still your warrior guy here, or was he just comic relief?
Drax is my, if I have one complaint about the movie, it's the way they handled Drax. Mm-hmm. In that he is just, for the most part, he is comic relief. That's what he is in this film. Right. And I mean, he was that a little bit in the first one, but he was also, you know, he was this torn character. He was, you know, tormented, but he was also, you know, he was a badass. And we don't, I mean, the whole, yeah, he jumps in the creature's mouth in the beginning scene, but we don't see much from him doing stuff, really.
Well,
he's supposed to be a destroyer, destroy things. Come on.
Well, he did strap himself, though, to a tether and grab a gun and jump out of a spaceship to shoot at another spaceship.
Yeah. So he had a little bit, but there's just, you know, it's, mm-hmm. it's, I wanted more from Drax. I wanted more Draxiness from Drax.
More Draxiness. It would have been nice to see him shine a little bit more. I agree. Don, how about you with Drax? Did you feel that pretty much he was the C-3PO of the movie?
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, I still think Dave Bautista did a fantastic job. I really did enjoy his performance and the job, but yeah, there was a lot less destroyer and a whole lot more comic.
Yeah.
And I mean, I will say, as much as that part disappointed me, yeah, I liked Dave Bautista in the role. In his comic relief, he was great. I mean, the whole, just imagining myself with you.
Yeah. Yeah, when he starts gagging, you're not quite sure later on when he meets Mantis and she tries to warn him of popping in his bed, and she's trying to tell him, and he's just like, I'm just like, what the hell? Yeah, Batista surprises me quite a bit in here, considering, you know, his wrestling background, but he's one of those wrestlers that really transitioned well, and he just is into this role. Paul, you're a bit of a wrestling fan, aren't you, or familiar with it anyway? What do you think of Dave Bautista? Would you say that he kind of surprises you with his performance?
No, I've seen him in other roles, and I know that he's a good actor. Mm-hmm. And I've seen some of the characters that he kind of played in his wrestling career. Mm-hmm. And it is a bit over the top. So I think if anybody can play over the top, I think that they can do a good job. And I do want to point out that there's a really, really great emotional scene that he has. And that was the scene where he basically doesn't show much emotion. And when he was talking about his family and his daughter, and it took Mantis to use her powers, and you saw her cry instead of Drax. And mm-hmm. I thought that was just because throughout the entire movie, you had him being that silly, goofy guy that had no real emotional volume control. Mm-hmm. He was always on 11. And then that one scene, he was completely, in my mind, mute emotionally. And she had to cry for him. And that made that scene and made his emotion even more intense. And just to watch that in his face, again, that's great acting in my mind. He didn't have to say a word. He just said it through his face.
Yeah, that is a great scene when they end up on Eagle's planet and Mantis and her and him are having kind of that heart to heart. I really like that. Everybody does get moments in this film, which I liked, considering how many characters you have. I think it's great that everybody has moments. I did not expect the difference in tone, but it was a welcome change. Paul, what'd you think of that difference in tone? I mean, in the first one, it felt a little bit lighter, and I know some people had a problem with it, but this one, it was still entertaining, but it really does have a different tone, doesn't it?
Yes, it's a little bit darker, and honestly, this does not feel like a sequel to me. It feels like a brand new movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that. Don, how about you? The tone difference between this and the first one, would you say this almost feels like a completely just separate movie?
Yeah, it does. And I think it has to do with what Paul mentioned earlier, is that they're not trying to do one. I mean, as much as they have a big ensemble cast, the way the movie is put together is it is broken into chunks, and certain characters are put together, paired together to, and each of those characters kind of bond and grow both together and a part of the rest of the group.
Right.
So it's handled slightly differently than the other film and other films in the MCU have been handled with that bigger ensemble cast. And I think that's what kind of gives it that different feel of being a whole new movie.
Yeah, I would agree with that. How about you, Glenn? Did this feel, when by calling it Volume 2, did it feel like just a completely new story and not, you could watch this almost by itself?
Oh yeah, you could watch this entirely. I mean, there's just those little things, you know. It's like the fact that there's obviously something unspoken between Quill and Gamora, and then, you know, just some little things. I was like, you know, why is her sister so mad at her? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, no, it doesn't feel like a, in a lot of ways, it doesn't feel like a sequel. It just feels like this is a movie that they just said, this would be a cool movie to have like this. And they're like, okay, cool, let's do it.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Don.
Even with that bit about why is her sister so mad at her, the bits between Gamora and Nebula, it's still explained well enough that you don't need to see the previous movie.
Yeah.
They go back much farther than that.
Oh yeah. This is the type of thing that people like my mother would, the second she shows up all pissed off before she's had a chance to explain, she'd be like, why is she so mad? It's like, watch the movie. watch the movie. And then you'll find out why she's so mad if you watch the movie.
Did you guys hate Thanos even more? Based on the stories that they were talking about, you know, their story.
This is like the fact that I ever had love for Thanos. I mean, come on.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you know, I just watched something, a big long thing on Stalin. And I'm like, hell, you know, yeah. Okay. So he's worse than I thought, but does it really make me feel worse about him? No, I felt he was a pretty horrible person to begin with. So, this doesn't change my opinion on that. It's just like, oh, he did more bad things than I thought. So that's just kind of like, Oh, yeah. Thanos is an asshole. Okay, yeah. They're just reaffirming that.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So. I liked how they kept the theme of family in different ways amongst these pairings, which I didn't quite expect coming from a film, from a superhero film. But I mean, we get Quill exploring it with his dad, with Ego played fantastically by Kurt Russell. You get the pairing of the sisters, but I will say the surprise pairing for me was Rocket and Yondu.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, what did that surprise you a bit, how they were able to bring those characters together like that?
I wouldn't have imagined it initially. But I mean, as soon as you started seeing the chemistry between them, I mean, absolutely. Because I mean, it's, you get the feeling that, you know, Yondu was a lot like Rocket at one time, you know, that whole, you know, pushing everyone away. Mm-hmm. And it also, it's the fact that you get to see, I mean, father is a big thing in this. It's not just family, and always it's father as well. Because you've got the whole, not the greatest day with Ego. And you have Yondu, who wasn't always, he's not like a good guy, but he did the best he knew how to do for like Peter. And in some ways, he's even acts as a father there and towards the end towards Rocket.
Mm-hmm.
And gives like, you know, some of that fatherly advice of the, you know, it's the typical dad thing is, you're heading down a bad path. And I know this because I went down that path and I did some bad shit and fucked up a lot of parts of my life. And I can see where you're headed because I've been there. And that's that kind of, and not just dad, but it's parenting in general. It's the, you're going where I've been. So, you know, yeah. I understand what you're going through because I've been there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, seems like that. You just forgot that Rocket was a completely CGI raccoon. Paul, how about you? Did that surprise you with Yondu and Rocket?
Honestly, I wasn't surprised by the pairing because I always kind of felt that they had some similar motivations and they had a similar type of background, and this volume 2 reaffirmed that for me. So yeah, they did wonderful things in this film.
They did with them and the sisters as well. It was surprising me how, what they did with, I did not see them developing Michael Rooker's character like they did. Dawn, did you get an idea at all that they were going to do that with that character?
No, from the first one, no. You knew something was coming because at the end of the first one, even though he knew he got screwed, because he had the little troll instead of the infinity stone inside that little ball thingy.
Sure.
Michael Rooker was more amused than angry. So you knew there was already a soft spot there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he made other references to how Star-Lord's dad was a prick.
Yeah.
So you knew that there was a, you know, something softer than what was being portrayed. I don't think it quite revealed just how much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just like the exploration of his character because I didn't expect that. In all honesty, when you see the trailer and you see how much Drax was featured in it, I was like, Drax is dead.
Wow. I know, destined. He's destined, though. He has a destiny.
I know, but it sounds cynical. But usually in the promos, you know, a lot of times if they feature a specific character, you're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, he's, you know, you knew someone was going to die at the end of this one. but you mentioned Ego. You know, it's funny. Everybody seems a bit surprised, you know, that he turned out the way he was, at least for me. But again, I'm not that familiar with the Guardians lore or whatnot, or with the Ego character, but I'm just like, his name alone tips you off, doesn't it, Dawn?
Oh yeah.
mean, you know, wait, how'd you feel about Kurt Russell and his Ego character? Did you like how Kurt Russell played this off?
Oh God, yes. Mm. I after watching it, I mean, I yeah, he was, I think he did an admirable job. He played it that yeah, God. Okay, so that kind of arrogant smirking. Yeah, mm-hmm. I know.
What is it, Glenn?
That swagger that he has.
Yes. Like the same, it kind of reminded me of that same arrogant swagger and that same arrogance that he had in Big Trouble in Little China, except instead of the naive blundering type, it was that I know something you don't know, and boy, I can't wait to show you.
Right. Yeah, he was, I think what got me was as you know, something else was kind of going on and not quite right with him, but at the same time, you know, his evil was really sincere. if that makes sense. There was sincerity, complete sincerity in his motivation. And I know we get that some, you know, with some villains, but not quite all. Some villains, you feel like they're just doing it to be bad, but there's a sincerity here of him wanting to procreate across the entire galaxy to take it over. Glenn, how'd you feel with Ego?
I love the character. I thought it was incredibly well done. I like the whole concept of it. And the whole, you know, his evil, and I think you kind of touched it. I think part of it is that, I mean, to an outsider, he is evil, but to himself, he is not.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, I mean, you have some villains where it's, you know, they know they're the bad guy. they know they are.
Yeah.
And in Ego's case, that's not what it is. He doesn't think he's the bad guy. And it's partly because he is so far removed from, you know, like a normal person that, you know, he doesn't understand the basic concepts like, you know, hey, you know, wiping out all of civilization in the universe is a bad thing, even though, you know, but for him, it's, you know, I'm going to make it better.
Right.
Because it's flawed. So I'm going to make this better version of it. And I love that in the character. I think they did an incredible job with it. Kurt Russell, I think, was fantastic. And a big part of this, I think, is because, as Don said, there's just something about Kurt Russell where he just has that. It's so easy for him to have that kind of that swagger, that confidence, that cocky bravado that just seems, you know, second nature to him. And I think part of it is just that it is. That's kind of how he is in real life.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, it's like and if people ask like, why are you like this? He's like, I'm fucking Kurt Russell. You know, it's like, come on, what do you mean? Why do you not know who Kurt Russell is? Because that's me, and I'm pretty freaking amazing.
And Paul, yeah, he's not wrong.
Yeah. did you like the casting of Kurt Russell in this, Paul?
I did. I think he was able to play off the big ego, but he also was able to play the father. I think I actually kind of did fall for him a little bit, you know, in the mm-hmm. in the aspect of, yeah, he does care about Peter. He really did. And yeah, good acting there. Good acting.
It was, and it's one of those where you know what he's doing is wrong, but you actually, I really got from his character that he did, in fact, really love Peter's mom, which is, you leave, you know, or all of them. It leaves you conflicted. You're just sitting here going, but you
gave her a tumor.
you gave her a tumor, and you're sucking the energy out of all your progeny. You're just sucking them dry. And oh, I love that scene though. When, yes, this is a spoiler room. When he revealed that he put the tumor in her head, Paul, the way Peter reacts to that, how'd you feel?
appropriate. Absolutely appropriate. yes,
it was. But the thing is, again, that's James Gunn playing a little bit with your expectations. Cause you figure, oh, you know, Peter's going to sit there kind of gape mouth for a little while. Oh my God. As Kurt Russell continues his monologue, but Don, Peter doesn't do that, does he?
No, not at all. And actually that part didn't surprise me.
Oh really?
No, I that was his mom was his world, mm-hmm. always his world. And as much as he wanted that dad, as much as he wanted that relationship and as much as ego was able to get into his mind, that would be the one and the only thing that would pull him out of it. Because, I mean, they had already set him up. Well, you would expect that it would have been the unspoken thing with Gamora. And so, that is probably the only thing that didn't surprise me.
And as I mentioned, our other characters get to shine. They introduce side characters, which I didn't get quite the Easter eggs for, but I'm sure many Marvel fans out there did, like the original Guardians, actually. I think it was Sylvester Stallone's character. Wasn't his character supposed to be one of the original Guardians?
Yes, he is. He's Starhawk.
He's Starhawk with a couple of the other characters in there, which, you know, they were really cool characters. I didn't quite get the reference, but I heard the gasps in the audience. the Marvel fans who did get the reference. But we get Howard the Duck back in here as a cameo, and you get all these characters. But, you know, I on the whole, I thought they did very well for the sequel, and the ending, you didn't expect them to do that with Yondu's character. Glenn, how'd you feel about how the film ended?
Oh, man. You know, I knew at some point in the movie I was going to cry. Because, I mean, it's after the first one.
Sure.
I mean, the whole We Are Groot, I'm like, fuck you. Fuck you, James Gunn. And then I'm waiting the whole movie for it. I'm like, something's going to happen at the end. It's going to make me fucking cry. And what's it going to be this time? I would have never have guessed that it'd be Yondu that makes me cry.
Mm-hmm.
That was never a thought in my head. I thought maybe, you know, he'd sacrifice himself in some way, but just the way he did, and then his whole speech going out, I'm like, God damn it. I almost made it through.
Yeah, I know, because Michael Rooker, he does that little extra cheek tap just before Yondu completely died. And I'm just like, oh my God, just let go of my heartstrings now. How is this a superhero film? Damn you. Yeah, I got misty as well with that scene. Paul, how did you feel about the way the film ended and the character who ended up being the star of the show?
Yeah, I loved the tribute. I loved, like I said, the hero's path, the hero's mm-hmm. journey. They completed his path. I mean, he started out kind of like the outcast, the exile from the Ravengers, and at the end they gave him the ultimate salute. They gave him, you know, the colors. The colors. It was amazing. And then it made me feel wonderful. It made me feel heroic. Like this is the type of ending. They always, I shouldn't compare this, but like the Superman's death scene didn't feel like this to me. Mm-hmm. It was sad. But this one felt heroic and sad. And I just loved what they did. And I think they did it. They did it really well. And the fact that he started out the way he was, and he completed his journey, and he was sent off in the way that you want to be sent off. It just, mm-hmm. I loved it. And they couldn't have done it any better in my mind.
In all honesty, my brain still was in denial till he actually gets torched into the mystical unicorn bits. I thought, oh, they're going to have him like wake up and, one of those, oh, he was in hibernation or something, you know. Yeah,
it's an alien feature of his.
Feature of his, but they did. Dawn, did this get a little emotional for you at the end?
You know, it did, and I uh-huh. really loved it, and can't, and agree with Paul and Glenn about not expecting him to be the one to evoke that emotion.
Right.
But... And I was all wrapped up in it right up until the other Ravagers came in for the send-off. And then they showed the original, the Guardians. Yeah. Because as they started flashing those cameos up on screen, I'm thinking, oh, my God, we've gone Sharknado. And it took me completely out of the film.
Did it really?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it did. And it really kind of, it kind of ruined that whole scene for me.
Because you caught the nod and you're like suddenly distracted by the nod versus the...
No, it was all of the celebrity cameos.
Oh, right.
It's like,
right.
Okay, we've gone... If we've gone from, okay, cool, they have Sylvester Stallone in, to we're throwing every cameo we can right at this end. Mm-hmm. And it's not the same as the throwing the cameos in like interspersed through the film or in the credits scenes. It was like, okay, every cameo is going to be here and they're going to show up as a Ravager. And okay, we've gone Sharknado and I'm done.
I think in their defense though, I think Yondu was an actual original Guardians of the Galaxy from the original comic book series. So,
and that's fine.
Yeah.
I had no problem with the actual original Guardians being there.
It was the cameos. It was
the actors they used to. If they had shown up and it had been Bob Johnson, brand new actor in Hollywood, and you know Lisa May, you may have seen her on this one episode of One Life to Live.
Sure,
gotcha. But it's the fact that it's Michelle Yeoh and it's Sylvester Stallone and.
Ving Rhames. So I was gonna say that did distract me a little bit too at the end. The thing is, you could almost just cut those bit after Sylvester Stallone does his salute. You could cut the other cameos out, and because those really don't add anything except maybe a bit of fan service.
Well, I will let it slide completely. If 2 years from now, I have that movie.
Yeah, exactly. If you set it up, you had them kind of appear, you're right. If that group's going to do a movie, or if they're working together in, say, Volume 3, which would be an interesting twist. I know fans would probably lose their crap, but could you imagine if Volume 3 had very little to do with our core group at all?
I'd love it.
Well, I wouldn't even, as Glenn said, I wouldn't even mind it if they had that same core group return for a part of the Volume 3, even. Mm-hmm. Because then it won't feel, I would completely forgive that.
Well, yeah, then it's less fan service and it's more.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think maybe that's what they're leaning towards, because it felt odd that they were doing that at the very end. And I'm like, they've got to be setting up, because that group even gets a mid-credit sequence, one of five mid-credit sequences, which I feel horrible. And though, like I said, I'm just a casual comic book fan. I had to look up who the Adam character was she was referring to. I know, bad me. But which it does make me look forward to the
Adam next. Savage from Mythbusters.
Yes, definitely, yeah. Adam Savage.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Yes, I'm the only one here not versed in comics. I understand that. Okay. I had to look that it was going to be Adam Warlock. Okay, all right. I admit it. All right. But the significance of that, it eludes me as well. But... makes me look forward to the next one, which I thought it was funny, because did you guys notice during the credits, because they did the different styles of credits, we had Jeff Goldblum actually show up.
Yeah.
he actually showed up in the credit. I'm like, why do they have him in there? Makes me wonder if he's going to be in 3. And they also had, do anyone here, and just answer anyone, know who the old guy, well, the badly looking makeup old guy was in the minivan, because they specifically focus on him and he actually shows up in the end credits as well. Who that's supposed to be at all? Do we even know? Because it just seemed significant, because he was specifically featured as on the minivan when you know, the second time the big blob was taking over the Earth, it stopped and he was in there and you could actually see him. They made it a point of you. And then you see him at the end credits. I'm like, who is that supposed to be? But I don't know. Anybody? Is it just maybe?
I do not know.
Maybe some hidden cameo that James Gunn put someone in that he knew.
I'm sure whatever it was, there's someone, if there was someone listening right now, they'd be going, you guys don't know shit about another. That was obviously this guy.
I won't make a point of looking for it when I see it again on Saturday.
Yeah, because he showed up in one of the bubbles at the end credit sequence, and he was the guy in the minivan before the blob stopped the second time. And I just, I was trying to figure out what the significance, because I'm like, normally you don't, you know, they don't have that type of scene where you can actually see the characters and they drop a line in there. You know, of course, he did hide Nathan Fillion got hid in the first, you know, Guardian. So it could be someone he knows that he worked in, some secret cameo. You never know. But the five credit sequences, what I like the most, I want to get to your guys' questions or topics, but what I just want to say is what I like the most, though, is the fact of even with the end credit sequences, it was still standalone and it wasn't trying to tie into the other MCU films. At least that's the way it felt to me. Dawn, did you get that feeling too? Was that kind of a little bit of a nice break to where the end credit sequences seemed still contained to the Guardians story rather than to the ultimate, you know, over building arc that we've been getting the last 10 movies?
Yep. I'm waiting to see how they're going to fit it in. I mean, obviously they have to go back to Earth at some point. But it is definitely refreshing that they haven't gone there yet.
Yeah. And I guess that's what it's also appealed to me for the Guardians is the fact this is, you know, not on Earth at all, you know, outside of a little bit of flashback, but for the most part, we're not doing all our action on Earth, and all the credit sequences seem to pertain only to the next film. You know, I think they've built it up enough. We know what's coming. You know, I'm fine with no more post-credit sequence. I mean, I remember the one where all the post-credit sequence one was Thanos grabbing the glove, and people lost their shit, and I'm like, that's what people are losing their crap about. And I've heard a couple complaints that say, oh, this one doesn't set up anything for any Infinity Wars. Paul, did that disappoint you at all?
Nope, not at all. I think Adam is enough to mm-hmm. be to me. I mean, although they kind of changed his purpose in the Infinity Wars, right. But so it'll be interesting to see what they do with his character. But to me, it doesn't really matter because I'm more interested in continuing the cinematic universe. I don't really care that it's setting up for Infinity Wars. It doesn't have to. I'd be more happier if they would have set up for Black Panther or you know,
Thor,
Captain Ragnarok. Marvel.
Yeah,
Ragnarok would have been an ideal time, you know?
Yeah. Well, considering the reference too, you know, and it's the next one, and even the Thor trailer was more towards in the Guardians vein, and they're taking more things out into the galaxy rather than Earth. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that would have made sense, but it was still good. I like the fact that it was contained to the Guardians storyline. So we're gonna get to your topics here, Dawn. Why don't we start with you? Did you have a topic or a question we haven't covered yet that you wanted to bring to the group?
Nope, the only thing I wanted to bring to the group, I already did, and that was the cameos.
The cameos, okay. Glenn, how about you? Did you have anything?
Are we going to get a Howard the Duck movie?
I'd be down for one, considering we've seen him again in here, and I'm like, I'm all for it. They could do it now. They could pull it off. He's shown up twice now, so people at least are familiar enough with him. I'd like to see a Howard the Duck film. Paul, how about you?
I think if they do it in the vein that they did with Guardians, yes. But if they tried to do what they did in the previous incarnation,
well, Jesus Christ, no.
Yeah, thank you. You never know.
No one's looking for a remake of that thing. Besides, we couldn't get the PG rating because it had duck boobs. So.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
They couldn't remake it then because people be like, where's the duck boobs?
That's something different.
Oh, great. Now, the next time I watch that movie, that's all I'll be singing. Yep.
Motorboat and dirty pillows, duck boobs. No, anyway, sorry. sorry. Glenn, you're saying, you'd like to see a Howard the Duck film now?
Yeah, I'd be up for that. Mm-hmm.
If they did it, maybe, like Paul said, handled it more in a kind of a Guardians vein rather than, you know, the way they.
Oh, yeah. It would have to be in in a vein like the. I mean, yeah. Let James Gunn do a Howard the Duck movie.
There you go.
Yes.
I'd be all over that.
I would too, because he's really proving well with these films that he's directing. I'd be down for it. That could be a lot of fun. They could even still get Leah Thompson back because she hasn't changed much, you know. So they could have her back. I bet she'd come back for a Howard the Duck film with James.
Yeah, because she's doing so much otherwise right now.
Paul, how about you with a topic or a question that we may not have covered yet tonight that you may want to talk about with Guardians?
Well, we covered my original one, which was how the feeling of the film and how it was different. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to kind of twist that question around and work about the pairings themselves. What was everyone's favorite pairing in this film?
Oh, okay. Don, what was your favorite pairing?
Oh, geez. I got to think about that. yeah, of course. It was Rocket and
Yondu.
Rocket and Yondu, yeah.
Yeah.
Good choice. Yeah.
Good choice. Glenn, how about you? What would be your favorite pairing? Is that the same?
Hands down, Rocket and Yondu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's across the board for us here. I will say it's a close second, a close tie with Gamora and Nebula, because I really liked Karen Gillan's portrayal of Nebula in this quite a bit, because you don't see her at all. You know, I mean, she's totally into the character, and I know that's partly the makeup, but the way her performance is, you see Nebula, and I really liked the dynamic between her and Gamora and how they grew that in this film to where it wasn't just something a little bit more, you know, that she was sent to do this because of dad sent her out to do it, you know, and mm-hmm. that pairing I thought was a real interesting dynamic and worked well in here, I think, to help. So it's not just the guys club in all honesty. Mm-hmm. You know, here they tried to put elements, I think, that would relate across genders as well as, or, you know, they tried to cover an issue, a similar issue that would relate to everyone in the group, in the audience. Someone could find one of these pairings to kind of relate to or understand. So it was really nice to see those two. But yeah, beating them out, though, was still, you get that scene on the ship where Yondu and Rocket kind of come face to face with how they're so much like each other. And that scene alone, just like, oh man, did not expect that at all. How about you, Paul?
I was going to say the sisters, but I'm as we were talking about Drax's character, and I thought about the one scene with Mantis and him.
Mm-hmm.
I really am starting to lean more toward that being my favorite pairing, because I realized just how important those two characters were to each other, because I think separately those characters would have just fell apart and they would be nothing. Whereas I think all the other pairings, those individuals were really strong and I think they could do well by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But with Drax and Mantis, I think that pairing needed to happen because those two really complemented each other well. So I think that's my final answer.
Nice.
So, yeah.
And I can see that, because Drax was kind of the not so emotional, and she was nothing but emotions.
Right.
Yeah. And so I think we'll wrap it up here tonight. Why doesn't everyone kind of just give their final thought with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and if they're looking forward to Volume 3. So, Paul, we'll start with you. Your final thought with Guardians of the Galaxy, and are you looking forward to Volume 3?
I am looking forward to Volume 3. I thought this movie was great. It was fresh. And I thought there would be some opportunities for getting fresh superhero films, and I'm glad that this movie proved it.
Mm-hmm. I'll say, and Glenn, how about you?
Yeah, sure.
Great.
Thanks for that feelings on the movie, Glenn. Great final thoughts.
Yeah, no, it was fun. I liked it a lot both times I saw it. Mm-hmm. Even the one time I saw it with the Spanish subtitles.
Spanish subtitles?
I got to go to an early screening.
Oh.
And it was super small theater. And a friend of mine, his roommate does movie reviews and stuff for Spanish speaking some newspaper, and then also he's done stuff for like Univision. So it was shown with Spanish subtitles.
Wow. That had to be an interesting experience.
Yeah, it was nifty.
Yeah. Cool. And Don, your final thoughts with Guardians and looking forward to number 3?
Yeah, I loved the first one. I thought, even though it, you know, wasn't quite as good as the first one, I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. I still thought it was a fantastic movie, could be watched without seeing the first one. And yeah, very much looking forward to the Volume 3. I even was pleasantly surprised that the soundtrack was as good as the first one.
That's true. We didn't touch on the music. The music was such an integral part of the first one. In this one, I thought the music choices were well thought out as well. They're different, but they're still really good. I never would have thought I saw a battle scene with Mr. Blue Sky, one of my favorite ELO songs ever.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn, how'd you feel about the music real quick? Did you think it was appropriate?
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Incredible. It was. Paul, did you feel the same way about the soundtrack?
Yes, it tied the visuals well, I think. It was very trippy, so yes.
Yeah, it still helped convey the emotions in that. I thought, for the most part, they matched up well. Even a couple of songs I wasn't actually familiar with, so I mean, I had heard maybe once or twice, but I was like, oh, wow, this is really digging into the archives, you know? So, yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, I agree as well, is fantastic. It was even better the second time because I knew what type of film to expect. And I think this is a film that you do multiple viewings with that I think you'll appreciate even more as you watch on, because you kind of know what type of film you're getting. And when you realize it is different in tone and kind of message than the first one, I think that helps you relax, and then you can really focus a little bit more on what's going on, which this film has a lot, I think, going on. So there you have it, folks. Spoiler Room Crew recommends Volume 2. Go see it if you haven't already. If you have seen it, go see it again. We need films like this, superhero films that, you know, aren't necessarily tied to the entire universe and can be standalone films and show you that they're still very much entertaining. So we'll wrap it up here tonight. This is where, real quick, people can go down the line and shill yourself. So Dawn, where can they find you at?
You can find me at intheaudience.net. And don't forget, in these times of hardship, just remember, we are Groot.
Indeed. Well said. And yeah.
Unfortunately, I couldn't get the Hoffs inflection here.
The Hoffs. His cameo was funny. I gotta admit, I didn't expect him to actually get him in here either. But Glenn, how about you? Where can they find you at?
You can find me on the internet, on YouTube with Guy in a Bunker Productions and the B-Movie Bunker, on Facebook with Guy in a Bunker Productions and the B-Movie Bunker, also on my website, guyinabunker.com, or follow me on my gaming podcast on gncast.com, The Adventure Party. Or just follow me on Twitter at guy in a bunker.
Awesome. And Paul?
You can find my movie reviews at ForsakenFilmReviews.com. I'm also part of the Film Jerks podcast, where this month we'll be covering an older superhero film called The Scribbler, which I'm excited about. And also be sure to check out newhorrorfest.com, where you can find out all about the Northeast Wisconsin Horror Film Festival.
Awesome. And you can find all my stuff at I Am Groot. I am Groot. I am Groot. And on the Twitter at I Am Groot. And that'll do it for us here on the Spoiler Room. We appreciate you listening. Please subscribe to iTunes if you haven't already. Like and comment. It always helps us out. Check us out on the Facebook. Leave feedback. Let us know what films you'd like to hear us talk about here in the Spoiler Room. And now we're just going to say good night, everyone. Say good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.